Talk America. Today, I have a very special pleasure. A matter of fact, I've been surveying the scene over the course of the last several weeks, and boy, have we ever had guests who are really right up to minute in the thick of what we need to be thinking about in order to deal with what I think is quietly, though quite noisily if you look at the circumstances of it, but quietly, the most assured assault on the sovereignty of the American people in the course of our history. I will put it now above the Civil War, because Lincoln, as I often say, in his famous address, said both sides prayed to the same God. And though we don't realize it, that was a true statement about the conflict. That was also a deep statement of the difference between the danger they face and the danger we faced. Why? Because on both sides, when they were trying to think through their situation in the conflict, they purported to look to the same standard. And that is the standard of God for what is essentially the responsibility of each individual human being to do things according to God's standard of righteousness, to God's will and judgment, not their own. And I think that that is exactly what has been under attack in our country quite oblately for the last 30 years, 40 years, but also entirely through the whole of the 20th century. In various ways, it built and built and built until now we are in the crisis of that challenge. And a lot of people think it's a challenge of ideology, and I think in the literal meaning of that term, it is. It is about what are the fundamental ideas that we give not only voice to, but allegiance to, in order to determine our judgment about what is right and what is therefore obligatory for us to do, and what is evil and therefore obligatory for us to oppose. You would expect that Christian people would be in the vanguard of that. And some are, but right now I would have to say still not enough. People who are thinking that something about Christianity is about saving yourself and being grateful to God that you can save yourself. Well, I'm sorry, y'all. Once you have welcomed Christ into your life, guess whose work is your work? Now, between you and me, was Christ's work on earth to save himself? See, the Jeopardy music plays while you ponder the answer, which is quite obvious. Of course not. Christ came to save us because, being the Son of God, he had no call for salvation. For he is salvation. He is the Word of God made flesh who dwelt amongst us. And who therefore repeatedly and always in his own example, in his own words, is calling us back to the standard of God. And in America, that's critically important. Do you know why? Because the country was founded, insofar as we are a nation based on the premise of the laws of nature and of nature's God, and of the unalienable rights with which God has endowed us. Now, a lot of people, they always say, Obama was always fond of this, and other people fall into it, that our rights are a gift from God. Our rights are not a gift. Our rights are an understanding of our responsibility to God. And therefore, as the word unalienable implies, you cannot escape their challenge. Unalienable means something that you cannot give away and that cannot be taken from you in any righteous fashion whatsoever. That's a right. And what does that mean? That it's mostly about our responsibility to God. Well, my guest today, Jason Dean, is somebody who has been in the midst of the crisis we're in. I find him a very fascinating interlocutor because he's somebody who has worked in a field that is about health, but in the midst of a crisis of health that I'm afraid has been so based on the use of the logic of health and of the strategies that science allows us to deploy for our health, that it can be used as a weapon to distract people from what is really the basis of health in our polity. For the basis of health in our polity is the assurance that we should derive from walking a walk that is in accordance with the laws of nature and of nature's God, in accordance with the standard of God. And I think, Jason, welcome to the show. I'm really glad to have you on because you are somebody, I mean, you have a degree in education, but you're not, how can I put it, prey to the self-worship of the medical profession. And therefore, you have been thinking about things from a natural point of view, from God's point of view. Tell us how you see the present crisis of our time, and how what you do in order to help people think through how best to handle the challenge of getting and staying healthy in the midst of a time when I think a lot of people are pushing us to believe that we have no alternative but to become slavish dependents on the power of government.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate that. And I have to say a quick story is my grandfather, who's since passed, used to watch you. So it's actually quite fascinating that I'm on your show because obviously we are trying to save America here. And you are absolutely correct. They've used healthcare as a means or a weapon to actually enslave America, which is obviously a very large problem. But also, and this started back in the early 1900s with Rockefeller, and I'll actually go back to this. They actually granted Johns Hopkins University a large grant at the time, where they took over healthcare and they called it public health. And I go back to our Constitution and the fact that, you know, our Constitution doesn't talk about healthcare. It doesn't talk about public health because, quite honestly, that's the responsibility of the American person. That's the responsibility of the sovereign individual, the being. And so what we've done is we've actually turned this around. We turned this from going off of God's laws, natural laws of healthcare. We were given an earth with plants, with animals. Plants as being medicines, which if you go way back, I have Native American roots on both sides of my family. You can go back to where they actually used that exact stuff, those exact herbs, those exact remedies to help themselves and fix themselves if there was a problem, because those were the natural laws of the body, the natural laws of health. It's a temple. We are supposed to take care of it. And they've actually flipped or inversed this to where now we are beholden to, they call it science. It's not science, it's scientism, right? What they're doing is they're getting everyone hooked onto a medical model. And I always tell people, I'm not anti-medicine. Obviously, we've done some amazing things with modern medicine to saving people's lives through medications, through doctors, through surgeries. But now we've turned into this world where everyone's beholden to it. And in the moment that the news and TV says, hey, we have a major problem, and now everyone has to go and take this pharmaceutical product to be healthy, what's really happened there is we've actually disconnected ourselves spiritually and mentally from our Creator and believing that man has the answer and man is going to fix us, man is going to solve this problem, when in reality, I have to chuckle, unfortunately, because that takes us away from not only our sovereignty as a being, but also it takes us away from the very principles of which our nation were founded. We are supposed to be the innovators. We are supposed to be the innovators, but still going back to what we are given, what we are granted on this planet that we're on. And they've done it not only through adults, obviously our nation, our population is so sick. Cardiovascular disease, cancer, diabetes skyrocketing. And now on top of that, I mean, these are just the actual numbers of it. On top of, we have a sick childhood population coming up now. We have autism, which never used to be a thing. 1 in 10,000 or less. Now we're down to 1 in less than 20 in some cases of children with autism, and they're going, oh well, we diagnose it better. No, what's happened is we've poisoned the human being. We've poisoned our future generations, and as you said, we talked about this before. Are we losing our nation? We absolutely lose our nation, but because we lose ourselves, we lose our connection to our Creator. And when you have that, I mean, Lenin even talks about how do you get to socialism? You do it through healthcare, and you disconnect them from their source, from their God, from their Creator. We've been watching this happen for long before COVID. We've been watching this happen for decades. Even at points, I was called the crazy conspiracy theorist because I would talk about this stuff for a long period of time, along with all the people that came before me. And now we're in this spot where people are finally waking up. So I really do have hope. I don't want to be super negative about it and going, okay, we're just done. We're toast. But we have so much education to do, sir. It's unbelievable because unfortunately, not only are the adults a bit brainwashed, we have generations of children that are unhealthy, that are very sick, and that are honestly, we're enslaved to not just the cabal, we're enslaved to the largest cartel, which is not the Mexican cartel. We're enslaved to the pharmaceutical cartel, doctor.
Now, increasingly, something that people are aware of, because I think it's very interesting, when Donald Trump was in there and working with all of this, they were telling us that we had to do X, Y, and Z in order to deal with the crisis. And then there were other voices being raised, and those other voices said that there were dangers involved in these vaccines, that they hadn't been tested properly, that they did not compare well in terms of the results of tests to the things we call vaccines that have been generally accepted in the past. But a lot of that, I think, was repressed. So I take away from that the conclusion that, in point of fact, what is being done was not in view of a crisis not to be predicted. By the way, we also know, don't we, that the crisis was actually a crisis that occurred with the collusion of certain elements in our healthcare establishment, with money derived from certain elements in our healthcare establishment, that it involved working with one of our major, shall I call them, adversaries or potential foes in the world, who have really been expanding their capacity to assert themselves so as to topple what they regard as our hegemony, but what is actually the allure that I think our way of life has had for people all over the world, in contradistinction with these dictatorial fascist, Nazi, communist, socialist regimes that are always treating people as if they have no responsibility to God, and therefore no way of dealing with their circumstances except to rely on the special expertise of those who present themselves as our saviors in the course of a crisis that they are responsible for creating. When you look at that, doesn't it sort of suggest that what we have really lost track of is the thorough sense that I think a lot of Americans, because bravery, we're the land of the free and the home of the brave. Why did we dare to call ourselves any such thing, the home of the brave? I think that's because a lot of ordinary folks, as this country was being explored and expanded, as towns were being built, as farms were being raised up, and so forth and so on, it wasn't the business of the great, it wasn't the business of the king, it was the business of ordinary people, including the first people, who came under the impetus of a desire to live in a way that accorded with the standard of God and to do so freely, without let or hindrance in terms of the righteousness with which we approached his will. Now, did that create perfect America? No, it didn't. And slavery was always the symbol of that. Oh, gosh, in the 19th century, there was slavery. All the leftists always talk to us about how America's in slavery and so forth. And so I'm asking myself, why do they concentrate all the time on an ill that, by the way, is still existent in large parts of the world, slavery? It was extinguished in the United States by conscious decision of people who had to lay their lives on the line in order to vindicate it. Doesn't that suggest that at the end of the day, we're more reliant on the premises and principles that tie us to God and our respect for his will ultimately, so that even at the cost of our blood, we are willing to try to acknowledge and live according to God's standard? And I think that's what made us great. That's what actually endowed ordinary folks with the kind of courage that used to be seen in Spartans who devoted all their time to war, but instead was seen in the hearts and minds of men and women devoting all their time to trying to build a farm and take care of the children and build a town and basically exploit for the positive purposes of life what God has made possible in us. That would put faith at the center, don't you think? But I wonder sometimes, do you think that most American Christians, most people who professed Christ, whatever the denomination, feel that special burden for the survival of our way of life? Because I'm not sure they do.
No, I it's actually a really good point that you bring up. Unfortunately, I have seen a people, and I'm a young man, but I've seen people. I was raised around my grandparents, and work ethic, church, morality, ethics, justice, et cetera. And it's actually quite interesting because I run businesses now and with my wife, and we watch this generational culture problem where we go to work every day, and sometimes we work too much because we love what we do because we're trying to save as many people as possible. And what we're seeing is we're seeing a culture shifted away from God, from the creation, from just honestly, even if they're not a religious person, shifted away from building a culture, building honest, trustworthy individuals. We actually have a problem right now where most people, they're happy to get up and take a universal basic income. They're happy to get up and take a $1,000 paycheck from a government who tells them they need to stay home when we've never done anything like that before when we locked down. So no, absolutely. We've been so disconnected from our creator. But on top of that, not just disconnected from our creator, we're also disconnected from even having a purpose in life. And I truly believe, in my humble opinion, we're all given a purpose. I have a purpose. That purpose was divinely put in me. I am supposed to be on a course to carry out that purpose so that I fulfill what I was meant to fulfill while I'm here. We've been disconnected from that. And I actually, that's some of the things I worry about when I go to sleep at night, and the fact that people every day are getting up and they don't care. They're not dressing as nice as they could. And that sounds ridiculous. They're not taking care of themselves. They're not taking care of their family. We have parents who are not parenting anymore. You know, I look into how healthcare is being stolen right now. We see the World Economic Forum going on, and we see them saying, hey, technology, they're going to put technology into medications. They're putting technology into vaccines, as they call them, which they're not vaccines at all. They're literally bioweapons. They're mRNA, DNA changing ingredients. And on top of that, now they have all these Americans, you know, we have teenagers and young people who get up. They don't go to get a job when they're young. Instead, they're wearing eye watches that they're not buying because they can't afford it because they don't actually work. Their parents are doing everything for them. We have little children. You want to talk about disconnect from God. We have little children sitting with iPhones and iPads all day long. And now they're wearing wearables, Fitbits, et cetera. They're being literally disconnected from their sovereign God and their soul and consciousness every single day, because we've given that up, unfortunately. And I don't like saying that, but I watch people literally, doctor, give this up every single day as if it doesn't matter anymore, because as long as they're taken care of, as long as they have a paycheck and there's some money in that bank account and they have their technology, that's their world now, versus going out there and creating something, living a purpose, serving other people and helping other people. And so I have that same concern as you do.
Well, I think part of it, and that's why I say, all along in the course of American history, from the very beginning, and that's why, by the way, the Declaration of Independence reads the way it does. It does not start out with the grievances they have against the King of Great Britain. It starts out with the sense that they have that we are actually all of us subject to the supreme ruler of the universe, God, and that God has endowed each and every human being with certain unalienable rights, among them life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, those words are not what we now think of as a gift. You give somebody a gift to use however they please, right? But if you give them a gift of something really valuable, you'll hope they will use it in a way that accords with its value. And that was an assumption of Christianity, because those first words of the Declaration are not about rights in the sense of freedoms to do whatever you want. No. It was the freedom to take that opportunity to choose and the wherewithal that you can back it up with, and choose for God's sake. Choose for the sake of your adherence to God's path and law in the way you deal with one another, with your responsibilities and so forth. And I think our Constitution was framed in that way. It's interesting to me that we now have a situation where people believe that something has been delegated to the national government, right, that was explicitly not mentioned. The Constitution is clear. The only rights the national government has are the ones explicitly delegated to the national government in the Constitution of the United States. where does the national government get the power to determine what we do to safeguard our health? That responsibility, it remains in the hands of the people at large, right? So that it says clearly in the the Constitution that the federal government has only the limited powers, and all the rest remain in the hands of the states, respectively, or the people. That "or the people" part being very important. But I think Americans have begun to accept the notion that somehow we are a subject people, not a sovereign people, and that ultimately the only freedom we have is to either accept what the government wants us to do or resort to taking a stand in a way that we'll have to defend with our bodies, right? With our willingness to stand firm and not do what we're told if it contravenes that right. But that all along was a reliance on Christian discipline, the self-discipline that you have, not because you are you or you are super intelligent or you are educated in this or that university, but because in your faithfulness to God, you recognize the standards and therefore can recognize what choice accords with God and what choice does not. Do you think most Christians are feeling? That's what I guess I feel is really slipping. It's not just a question of our population overall. It's a question of a Christian population that no longer realizes that the conversion to Christ is a literal conversion in who we are. We are no longer people out for ourselves. We're people in whom Christ, the indwelling presence of Christ, then becomes a transforming reality, so that we take on the burden he had, which is, in accordance with God's understanding of safety, we then proceed to save others. See, because Christ wasn't on earth to save himself. That's an absurd notion. So if you have the indwelling presence of Christ, shouldn't you be concentrating on saving others? And I think that's exactly what was done, because the first way that you can save others is to get them to acknowledge their responsibility to God as a personal responsibility that they must put at as the chief of their insight, the chief of their sense of right and wrong. We'll explore that further right after this.
Freedom of speech is a basic human right that has been hard-won and granted to all law-abiding Americans. As such, we should not take our freedom of speech and expression for granted. This is more important now than ever before, since world governments and the mainstream media often try to suppress those whose opinions differ from the so-called official narrative. Here at FridayOnStore.com, we are dedicated to fighting for every American's right to speak their mind without the fear of censorship or suppression. That's why every purchase you make at FridayOnStore.com supports our pro-liberty video sharing platform, Frideon.com, so we can keep bringing you all the latest unrestricted videos mainstream media doesn't want you to see. Support your health and this free speech platform by shopping at BrighteonStore.com today.
Many watching Brighteon TV will remember the fiery speech from Dr. Alan Keyes at the annual State Republican Dinner that ended in repeated standing ovations. Dr. Keyes has been an articulate and passionate spokesman for faith, convictions, and consistently strong enough to resist the tug of political convenience. Alan pierces through the ethical haze of our time and calls us to stand up for the truth, knowing that you cannot have the right to do wrong. Get your download of Our Character, Our Future, an audiobook by Dr. Alan Keyes, exclusive to the Brighteon TV audience. Dr. Alan Keyes personally read and recorded our exclusive audiobook version of his timeless essays in Our Character, Our Future for this very special promotion. You can order it by going to www.imtv.us and click on Special Offer. It's available at only $19.95 for a very limited time. You'll not only enjoy a tremendous savings, but you'll get an amazing piece of literature read by Dr. Alan Keyes himself. Get yours today. Go to www.imtv.us and get this Brighteon TV exclusive offer.
To have on my show Jason Dean. He's somebody who has devoted himself, and in the present era, it's a very important work, right, to the work of trying to help people take responsibility. for their own healthcare, to develop the kind of understanding that allows them to make responsible judgments, but in a context that is overruled at the end of the day, not by all the wonderful breakthroughs that scientists claim to make in this way and that, but about the underlying common sense of the world. That is, in my opinion, Jason, especially a characteristic of faithful Christian people, where you're looking first to consult God's standard, and your judgment and your sense of confidence in that judgment is going to be based on the conformity with the laws of nature and of nature's God, with the law as determined by the Creator, who is, by the way, for Christians who don't always focus on this, the Creator, the one who made all things, is in the Bible the Word through whom all things were made, and who then becomes Jesus Christ, the Word made flesh, who dwelt amongst us, in order that we wouldn't have the excuse any longer of saying to ourselves, well, you know, he's God. That's God. God is all powerful. How are we supposed to be able to do what God requires of us? Well, Christ came to exemplify the truth that if you have the commitment to God, then the faithful adherence to his truth, though it may involve dangers and difficulties, and he says at one point that your Christian faith is going to lead to life and health and all of these promised sort of safety, but with persecutions. That has always caught my attention, Jason, that he doesn't promise a life that is going to be without danger and struggle. And so I think that kind of understanding of ourselves became essential to the American way. If you refer to yourself as an American and you don't see that connection between your willingness to accept an understanding of right according to God, to do your best to live in accordance with that understanding so that you don't just serve yourself, but you serve everybody, because that's who Christ was, somebody who did not just serve himself but came to save others. Now, I think that you're particularly in a way of life now that corresponds to that call. First, I'd be kind of curious as to how you came to choose it and why you decided that this would be a priority for you. And second, you know, I'm sitting here talking about how people are responding to this crisis. I'd be curious that the people you encounter, that you are helping, also to focus on things that are within their reach in terms of understanding how nature and God's abundance has provided us with ways of strengthening what he has given us so that we don't have to give in, as Adam and Eve unhappily did, to the notion that we must be as gods, and ye shall be as gods, Satan said, as if that's an essential part of our vocation, when in point of fact, not to be as gods, but according to God, right? That is the essence of our true being. And as Christian people, we know that. We're supposed to live accordingly, but I think we're now being invited to disregard what is supposed to be the foundation of our lives. How did you bring these things together, and what have you seen in this, I think I could really call it a kind of health ministry. How have you seen that changing the lives, hearts, vocations, and sense of the people that you're helping?
No, absolutely. It's a great question. And I can actually preface that with, it's part of the divine path. It's part of the purpose. I was actually never in the healthcare world. I was not a doctor. I didn't start. This is actually a second career for me. However, I met my wife, who was already a doctor in the natural healing space, chiropractic, nutrition, finding out what the body needed to work properly. And I wasn't necessarily lost in life, but I was bouncing between a couple of things, trying to find purpose, I guess you could say. And so I decided to go back to school in my 30s, because I started watching miracles happen. When I say miracles, I'm talking about people coming into an office, in my office, that my wife was working with, other people working with, who were chronic disease, chronic illness, people who have defied natural laws of healthcare, and they're chronically ill. And then what I was watching, within a month, couple weeks, sometimes a couple months, people were reversing chronic health disease issues. When I talk about chronic health, we have the top three. Cardiovascular disease is the number one killer, behind then cancer, and then diabetes. And I'm watching these things reverse by adding what we've thrown out, which is the natural laws of healthcare, which are food, plants, things that actually go in and will clean the body up, fasting, different things that we talk about this in the Christian community, the fact that, you know, people go on fasts, one, because of health reasons, two, because of spiritual reasons. And so we saw this happen. I saw this happening with people, and it was almost as if the light bulb goes off. You find your purpose and you go, oh my gosh, I can help people. And not only that, I had a specific, I think, calling where I saw children being harmed, not necessarily physical violence, but food violence. I mean, I'm watching parents who are miseducated or not educated. And you go back to the government, you talk about that, when the fact that a federal government was not designed by our founders. It is not in the Constitution. It is not in the Declaration of Independence, not in the Bill of Rights. It's in no documents, to where our federal government spends millions and millions of dollars every year on, quote unquote, finding the science of food and research and medication and paying pharmaceutical companies or three-letter agencies to do this. When you get a food pyramid that comes out that is not healthy, we know this. I mean, in our world, that's not what causes health. I mean, we have a federal government who's trying to destroy nutritional supplementation that not just me, but stores out there, other health professionals out there who are helping people every day use that stuff. And we have a government who is completely out of control, who's trying to destroy that. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, just like the miracles I saw, those miracles happen because my wife and others applied a knowledge base that they learned from natural laws. But not just that, you have to have a person that's willing to go back to personal responsibility. This is one of those things that I do believe is constitutional, is in our rules and laws. You don't get to have freedom in this world without barriers. You don't, you know, the person who you find a young man or young woman, and right now we have pornography all over the place. We have social media all over the place. So they've been taught that they can just go do whatever they want to because there might be a save later or a medication later that will protect them from the harms of what they've done. When in reality, that's actually a loss of responsibility, and our government and a cabal has told them it's okay. Just be free. That's not freedom. We were given freedom because we have barriers, we have ethics, we have morals, we have a justice system, supposed to have a justice system, and where we know internally deep, it's been planted in us by our creator, what is right and wrong, right? However, when you have the brainwashing every day telling you not right and wrong, well, you make bad choices.
I sometimes marvel, Jason, with respect to that particular point. The verse that always comes to my mind is from the apostle. Stand fast, therefore, in the liberty wherewith Christ hath made you free. Mm. Now, from the perspective of a mind informed of and reading the scripture and pondering the life of Christ, that means that the word liberty was carefully chosen in the Declaration because it points you to a scriptural passage that then has you focused on Christ as your standard for judgment about this particular element and of your responsibilities, really. So the focus wasn't on what we would call freedoms, because to us, freedom means two things: that you have the choice and you have the wherewithal to make that choice according to your own judgment, right? But I think they used the word liberty in the Declaration because in the Bible we're taught that you do have the choice, but you have the responsibility to make that choice according to God, not according to your own judgment. You see what I'm saying? So that you're always having to live in the presence of that standard. In the course of the work that you do, how important is it that you're able to get people to start living with an awareness of the need to consult that standard, that there isn't a disconnect between the natural world and the challenges of survival in that world and the spiritual world, which leads you to cherish the word and vocation of God in Jesus Christ? Am I making sense?
No, absolutely. And I can actually give just a kind of a very simple layman's example of how we see it. Again, you know, you have somebody come in who has a chronic health issue. They've gone away from the natural laws of life. Whether they know it or not, something has been put into their body. We have a completely toxic environment. And then they come to us, but also they're making really poor, say, food choices. They're not living a lifestyle. They're living a sedentary lifestyle. They're not moving. They're not in nature. Maybe they're not in prayer, whatever it is according to them that they know that they need to do. And then on top of that, when we dive into them with them, we're showing them, hey, you might need to do this. You might need to eat differently. You might need, like, we get to the point where people are having emotional situations because they're not confronting their life. They're not dealing with, you know, the things in life that they have to deal with to be spiritually sound, because it's just too tough to look at, right? And so one of the simple examples is we have people come in who are consuming just terrible foods. I mean, they're consuming vast amounts of sugar, which we know is inflammatory, causes major chronic illness. And we slowly over time educate them. But the education is one thing. You then need the person to ultimately look inside and go, you know what? I am making poor decisions. Now that I'm educated and I see what the problem is and I see why I'm not feeling well, why blood tests are not going well, why my diagnostic tests are going incorrectly, why I feel terrible, why I'm labeled with the disease, why I have something like this. And over time, you educate them more and more. That person, and just how you said this, that person starts going inside, right? They start feeling better. First of all, you get the physical aspect of health. You feel better. They're going in the right direction. And then it never fails. It never fails. They'll come in. Could be a few weeks. It's usually a couple months down the road. They're feeling better. They're putting good nutrients into their body. They're eating good food. They're putting good quality ingredients in their body. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, they go, you know what? I was making bad decisions. Mm. I was eating whatever I wanted to. I was drinking whatever I wanted to. I was, you know, not communicating with my spouse or work. There's tons of things that come in from an emotional standpoint. I was not doing the things that I needed to do. I was avoiding. I was not confronting it. And that's a spiritual issue. That's not just a physical issue. That's a spiritual issue. They're not confronting the responsibilities in their life. And then as soon as they do, you know, when a choice is given to them again to kind of maybe fall off the wagon, whether it's, you know, food, drink, or it's something spiritual or life that they have to deal with, a family thing, whatever it may be, they look at it differently. It's that looking in the mirror effect, right?
Well, let me ask you a question along those lines. When you look back at and consider the work that y'all have done, do you have one or two examples of how changing their understanding of what they should look for in food has made a difference like this? Because I think that's something we're all challenged with. You know, the unfortunate thing is that we're encouraged at various points by people who want to sell us stuff.
Yes.
To always connect food with self-gratification. And the end result of that is to make choices that produce self-destruction. What do you think would be maybe an example or two of how one leads people to start focusing on the responsible choice in the sense of not what gratifies, but what actually helps to preserve and perpetuate?
Yeah, I'll give you two examples, actually. One is funny because one is my wife. It's actually her base. She just told the story the other day. That's why I said fresh in my mind, is she had somebody come in who had been seeing her for several months and was doing very, very well. And the person came in and was angry with my wife. And my wife, you know, like just listens. My wife listens, is what we do, right? And she said, what are you angry for? She goes, I'm not feeling better. I'm not doing well, et cetera. And she goes, but you've been doing great. And she said, what changed? She goes, nothing changed. I just don't feel good. And come to find out, she had went to a birthday party, right? Mm-hmm. And she decided to have not, I'm in Florida, so she decided to not have a slice of key lime pie. She decided to go off the wagon, and she decided to have an entire key lime pie.
Oh, dear.
Right. But the funny part was she felt terrible afterwards, but then she didn't want to ultimately take the responsibility. She was trying to push that responsibility off in the fact that, well, what you're doing for me is not working because I feel bad. And as soon as my wife kind of jokingly said, you ate an entire pie, she started laughing out loud hysterically, realizing, yeah, you know what? I made a not good choice. I felt bad afterwards because I put things in my body that I had not doing. And it was a complete reversal. She understood it. She didn't quit. She was doing great after that. I also have people that come to me who, and this is an interesting thing because, you know, I remember being a child And, you know, you made a bad choice. Maybe you went to a friend's house. You made, you know, made a poor choice, right? Well, just because you're young and you can make a poor choice because you're not mature enough to make it, you know, I look at it as adults almost as children as well, because sometimes we make really poor choices that we know were a poor choice, but it's kind of that child coming out in us. We just wanted to kind of like have fun and have some freedom, as it said. And I have people who come in, well, I had to go to a birthday party. I had to eat poorly. I had to eat crappy. And I take a step back and I go, okay, you went to a birthday party. That's fine. But you didn't have to make the choice of eating the poor food, drinking the alcohol that you don't usually drink. And it was actually interesting because there's a peer pressure aspect to this. And I think you can tie this back to even what's going on in country right now in America, what's going on in our nation. You know, even in Congress, the people who are making horrible decisions, how much is a coercion? How much is a peer pressure issue? And someone loses or they let go of their freedom of choice, for lack of better words, right? And they start making choice. We see it in adults. We see it in teenagers. We see it in children. I have a child. She sometimes makes a bad choice, right? And she has to learn from it. But we're also seeing right now people, we're seeing our own American citizens make bad choices every day because someone comes on television and says, to make this all go away, you have to take this shot that we don't have any science for yet. We don't know what's going to happen, but just trust us. You know, the same companies that have already been sued a million times over for billions of dollars because they mess up all the time and their products literally cause harm. But now,
weren't they literally? Because one of the things that has struck me over time as more and more has come out is that they kind of knew that what they were saying was not true. And that in point of fact, compared to what had been the rigorous standard for vaccines, for example, they were nowhere in the ballpark.
No.
With these vaccines. That raises a question, which I know you've probably pondered, because I think one of the most disturbing things to me about our present situation is that after a time when people had overcome their distrust of the medical profession, you see, it was proverbial. You can see it in the books in the early part of the 20th century that often concentrated on the theme of people distrusting the doctor, the TV shows where Doc Adams was always being subjected to the distrust of the ignorant, right? And so forth and so on. And a battle had to be fought in order to get people to trust in a medical science that was still developing, right? Now they take that trust for granted and I think deeply abused it in the course of this so-called COVID crisis, in order to achieve objectives that had nothing whatsoever to do with health, and that in point of fact are exploiting the trust in order to produce an outcome that is aimed at a goal that a lot of people would be aghast if you dare even to suggest it, that they think there are too many of us on this earth and we need to be reduced in population. Now that's still a theme that's sounded still at this World Economic Forum conference. And yet many people will shut their minds to the implication that the people you're working with in the pharmaceutical industry and who benefit from all of that, they don't really want you to live. They're sort of like that adversary of James Bond who looks at him and says, Mr. Bond, I don't want you to talk. I want you to die. Isn't that a message that we could conceivably see in the way things have been going with this cavalier attitude toward the truth and the rigorous standards of science that has prevailed, I think, during this era when they're trying to make everybody afraid of COVID?
They didn't even want to give out the scientific literature that they had built up over a period of time. The patent was already done before Trump came into office. I mean, they already knew, and then they try to hide the evidence for 75 years. I mean, if there was a legitimate pandemic, I'm going to be honest with you, I've told many people this, you would never handle it the way they handle it because you, first of all, even if you believe in a biochemical way of building up an immune system, there is still natural immunity. That there's no way around that. So what you would do is you would take your weakness, you would take your elderly population, you would take children who have an immune system issue. You would tell them, go home for a couple weeks, stay inside. We don't want you. You have a lower immune system. You're at a disadvantage. And then you would take all of us who are healthy with strong immune systems and you would say, hey, do us a favor. we want you to go out. We want you to go to church. We want you to go to dinner. We want you to be in the park. We want you to hug. We want you to kiss, hold hands, shake. We want you to touch because that's how natural immunity occurs. You go, it goes back and forth. And then within a month or less, it doesn't take long, you would actually have immunity. And those people that we did, hey, hang inside for a little bit, the elderly, the people who have a weakened immune system, you would then introduce them to everything and they would be fine. You would never go about it the way they went about it. The reason why they went about it was because that is the scientism. That is their religion. That is their one world order. That is what they want to bring in. So they have their only job. Their only, they must keep people in perpetual fear to keep this in, involved. Keep in mind, we are 3 years into this at this point. This is complete insanity. We've never seen anything like this, and this is not how healthcare works. So absolutely 100%.
Well, see, I think that that difference is because there is a difference in the strategic motive. Because the strategic motive of real health is to help keep people healthy.
Yes.
And give them the confidence to walk a walk that is likely to sustain them in that direction, help them to understand. And I think it's part of why they didn't share results. Since the results were not up to snuff, they didn't want to be called to account because the real objective was to foment fear, increase control, and if that meant you were going to reduce the population, that's also part of their objective. And this is what is shocking to me, that Americans don't appear yet to be focused enough on the fact that that's a deep betrayal of their vocation on behalf of the American people. They're supposed to be representing us in the business of trying to help achieve the nation's security and preservation, right? So that we all work and cooperate together to that goal. And that means they should be striking a special path that informs us, and especially in the way that you were just saying, informs us of how we can avoid the danger, not be subject to it. We're unfortunately at the end. This hour has gone so quickly. You must come back. Would you come back? Because I feel like we're just starting. We've laid a groundwork for a discussion that includes the relationship between the health and the polity. And I think that's not talked about enough yet. And we need to explore it further. Thank you so much for what you do and for being on the show. We'll be right back after this.